You can now support the podcast by monthly subscription for 99 cents a month, $4.99 a month, or $9.99 a month. Just click that support button. And all the people that I already have, I really deeply appreciate you. From the bottom of my heart, I mean it. And all the people considering and all the people that are going to in the future, thank you so much. Much love. Welcome back to another From the Stash podcast. I'm your host, James Davis McAllister. And today I have a return guest. I'm more of a guest host today. Dave Gravy Felton, thanks for being on the show again. I appreciate it, man.
Right on. You got it.
Yeah, a lot of people, I was saying before this, you know, a lot of people kind of got on me a little bit about I interrupted you a little too much and stuff. And
whatever.
I listened back and there were times that I did. And I think a lot of it is that how I record this remotely with, you know, you being where you are and me being where I am, it, like, sometimes I don't hear you stop talking, or I will hear you stop talking and I'll start talking, but you won't hear me start talking. We kind of over talked each other. Yeah. Well, that's besides the point. This was originally supposed to be a Halloween special that we were going to talk about horror movies and whatnot. And I had a windstorm and that kind of was out of the equation because my internet's terrible. But here we are today. So that's a good question. Do you even like horror movies? Before I even assume that we were going to do an episode on that?
Well, here's the thing about that. I like any movie that's like well-written and well-cast and well-directed. It really doesn't matter what genre it is. But of course, as a kid growing up, you know, you gravitate more towards like the, you know, the monster movies and the horror movies and all that kind of stuff. But I loved all that stuff when I was a kid, but up to a certain point, it just seems like a lot of horror movies got really formulated in the, like the way they were written and directed and all that stuff. And I think a lot of them, you know, there's like that jump factor, you know, where it'll scare you and you'll jump, you know what I mean? But it's
right.
it's not like some of the older horror movies where they didn't have the effects and same type of makeup things going on. And they had to write a certain way to kind of make your brain kind of, you know, question things. That's what made some of the older movies, I think, scary.
Right. More psychological.
Yeah.
I can remember watching Poltergeist and stuff growing up, and they had some effects then, you know, but not to the degree they do now. And still this day, that movie, it doesn't really freak me out necessarily, but it was a mind fuck, you know. Mm. I remember as a kid watching that, and, you know, Last House on the Left, and I can't think of what's the Shining and movies like that that were very psychological, as like you'd said, you know, they didn't have the effects, it relied on acting and writing. And
I
agree with there just isn't much originality. Every one of these horror movies that comes out nowadays seems to be, it's these kids traveling down a road in a car and it breaks down, and which is ironic.
It doesn't matter what it is, but they all just it's the same thing with you know, like you could compare like music and TV show, like everything today, it just has like kind of like, I don't want to say stale, but a lot of movies just seem to kind of, everything just seems formulated. It's like, okay, we know that these types of filters work for the coloring. We know that, you know, our story sucks, but it's got a good premise, so we're going to just scare you with like this face that pops out of the dark or this hand that grabs you or something. You know what I mean? It's almost like you're watching a haunted house.
Wow, I never looked at it that way. No, you're right.
You know how you walk through a haunted house and you're like, you're already anticipating to be, you know, not by something that really like scares the crap out of you on a psychological level, but you're going to be, you know, like anybody could do that. You know, your 5-year-old kid could jump out from behind the door and scream real loud and scare the crap out of you. Like that's what horror movies are. It's like, to me, over the past like 10, 20 years is just cheap pops. Like there's not even, it doesn't even seem to be a lot of substance.
No, there isn't. I mean, one movie I can think of in particular is Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, I remember hearing that that was like, you know, I was kind of seeing someone at the time that was like a total horror movie buff. And she was like, this is going to be the scariest movie of all time. And I remember seeing that going, whatever, this is just like a reality show.
It was bad. I mean, even the camera work was terrible in it. It was like a still cam that just was on the bed and the door the entire time.
Yeah. I mean, there's creepy moments in all of these kind of movies where you're watching it and you're like, ooh, yeah, that's cool. But it's, I don't know. Like I have my go-to ones that I grew up with, and maybe by like today's standards, some people like might listen to this and be like, that movie sucks. Or that movie's lame.
What are they?
But well, I saw Jaws in the theater when I was probably 9 or 10, I think.
Jaws, yeah, I agree. My stepdad made me watch those,
and it was Jaws was a lot of action too. It wasn't really horror, but I remember being a little freaked out by that. When the head popped out of the
absolutely.
Boat, the dead guy's head popped out of the boat, that freaked me out as a kid. The Exorcist was crazy at that time too. The original Omen was, I just watched that the other night and I was like, this movie,
never seen it.
The original Omen. Yeah. With, like Gregory Peck was in it. You know, he's an old actor. He's dead now, but like that movie just had like, there's just something about like, I think like the more primitive film style of like the 70s is, there's something about that. Like Rob Zombie tries to capture that with his movies, that 70s vibe. And
yeah, he does.
He kind of movies, and it's like, dude, I see what you're trying to do, but you're like, you're just missing it. Like I don't know how to really explain.
No, I know what you mean.
But it's like he's trying.
He tries to make them grind films almost.
Yeah, he's trying too hard to give them like that type of. You know, he gets the look right, but he doesn't get like. I don't know. There's just a vibe that's missing. That's what I mean. Like there's something really like just kind of gritty and weird psychologically to me about those older movies that the new ones don't have. It's like, yeah, the new ones are all, you know, it is like an eye candy spectacle in a way. But
I think the acting was better back then too, honestly.
Yeah, I think the writing and the acting definitely had more going on, because I think that, like, you know, when I think about those movies, they seem more believable, like this could actually really happen. And then when I see like a lot of the newer ones, it's like, okay, you know, you're already just throwing out like catchphrases, like that's what I mean about the writing. It's like nobody talks like that. This is fake as fuck, and okay, let's just get on with the cheap pop. Let's see this demon ghost or whatever, and let's, you know, whatever, like who cares? You know what I mean?
It's funny that you say that, because my favorite movie of all time is House of Thousand Corpses by Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
And we were just, you know, saying how he tries to make, you know, his movies fit a certain mold, or, you know, be something that they're not. And I don't know. There's a lot of things about House of Thousand Corpses that I like, from the acting to the writing to everything. But after that, I didn't like any of his movies, like Lords of Salem and things like that. But Last House on the Left was the original. Oh, that is one of my all-time favorite movies. just the way they did that. I mean, it was ahead of its time, and not to bring up something, you know, nasty and gruesome, but the rape scene in the woods was, that's something I'll never forget. It felt like I was there and real. So I know what you mean by like the, it's like the authenticity, you know, it's not this camera that has 70 filters on it and then it's edited 70 times. You know, it's just, you know, basically an 8mm camera in essence, you know, with minimal editing, because they didn't have that type of stuff back then.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, and it's different for everybody, you know, like we're, you know, I think you and I are probably 10, 12, 15 years apart age wise too. So, you know, we're going to have a different idea of
right.
what's going on with these movies and stuff like that. But I just remember as a kid, the, you know, like psychologically, like they were just kind of like more real to me. And as far as like, did you ever see Prince of Darkness?
Prince of Darkness. I can't say I probably have because my stepfather, but I can't say I remember it.
It's what's his name? The Halloween guy that did The Thing. You know, The Thing is one of my favorites from the 80s.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of his name. The guy that played Michael Myers?
No. The guy that directed the – why is his name? Like the guy's – he did Escape from New York, The Thing. He did the director.
It's not Wes Craven, is
no,
it?
No. What the why I can't believe I'm not thinking of him. Well, anyway, he did this movie too. Prince of Darkness. I'm pretty sure he did that. And it's a unique film. It's about like the devil coming back and taking over the world. It's kind of it's not really overly scary, and it's, I don't know, there's just something cool about it. I don't know what to.
An originality, uniqueness
yeah,
to it.
Yeah. It's Alice Cooper.
Yeah. It. Well, maybe I have seen
he has a cameo in it. I don't think he has a speaking part.
He
has a cameo in it. And then there's another movie called, and I think it came out in the early 90s, called The Serpent and the Rainbow. It's kind of like a weird voodoo type of flick.
I can't say I'm familiar with it. Jeez, now you're making me feel like I don't like horror movies at all. No, I'm teasing. I just that's my favorite genre. You know, my fiance the other day is like, hey, you want to watch this movie? I was like, do people die in it? And she's like, no. I was like, then I don't want to watch it. And it's not that I'm like, you know, some sick, twisted individual. Can you hear me?
Something happened. My phone bumped and then it disappeared for a second. Some screen popped. So.
No. Yeah, I'm not like some sick, morbid individual, but I just have a short attention span. So if there's not instant action, I can't sit for an hour, hour and a half and watch something, you know?
Yeah, a lot of the newer flicks, the newer horror flicks, they'll be on like a movie channel or something, or you know, there'll be a cut version on, and you still get a vibe of it, you know. Like, have you seen that Quiet Place movie?
No, I haven't, but I've been suggested to see it. Is it good?
It's okay. I watched it the other night because I was like, oh yeah, I heard this was pretty good. And there's, you know, it's kind of cool, but at the same time, it's like really fucking stupid. It's like,
I've just watched the previews.
Well, they figure out, you know, because I don't want to ruin it for you, but you have to be quiet because these creatures are, you know, they're super fast and they fuck you up instantly. As soon as they get you, you're dead. And you know, they don't see, they're attracted to sound, so you have to be quiet. But apparently there's no other people on Earth. There's just this family, and at the very end they figure out how to kill it when they show all these news clippings in the guy's room saying that it's indestructible. And at the very end of the movie, she just shoots it in the head with a shotgun and it's dead. So What the fuck?
All that build up for nothing.
You're telling
yeah.
me that like because the one daughter's deaf and she gets this squealy frequency out of her hearing apparatus that kind of stuns the creature, and that's when the mom shoots it in the head. So it's like you're telling me, out of anyone in the whole planet, all these scientists and engineers and all these types of people, military and whatever, nobody figured out to try to some kind of sonic blasting at this thing to do anything. And if a shotgun can blow its head off, like what the fuck couldn't a 50 caliber Barrett do or something? Like, are you kidding me?
It sound like me. I'm like that. I'm like super like, how would you say this? I'm super like critical, like realistic. I'm like, well, that couldn't happen in real life. So I can't, like, I've never been into sci-fi for that reason. Like, yeah, I can't, it's hard for me to get into it because it's hard for me to fathom, you know?
It's like I was saying before, it's like some movies are gems to me and the whole rest of the genre is like dog shit. So it's.
Well, what do you think of Saw? Have you ever seen like the original Saw movie?
Yeah, I've seen them all.
I like that series. Well, I like at least the very first one because it was unique and different and there was nothing like it and it just blew me away. You know, I didn't figure it out till the very end, you know, and I'm like, whoa.
That's the thing about those is like the disturbance factor. That's why like, you know, the Exorcist was so creepy to me as a kid. You know what I mean? Because it's like disturbing. Like she's gross and it's demonic and it's, you know, it's portrayed really seriously. And it was, you know, she looked so gross and all that stuff. But yeah, the Saw thing I thought was definitely, that was pretty unique flick for the time too. But like the Halloween's and the Friday the 13th and all that kind of shit. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah. After the second, third one, it's like, okay, dude, we've seen it. I get it. Yeah. You know? And then they keep remaking them, you know, and it's like, oh, geez, man, just do something original.
I got bored with those. But it's, you know, that's the thing with the franchise, you know, something does good and then they just beat it to death.
You know? Running the ground,
like,
right?
I love the first Alien. I thought the second one was amazing back then. Now for some reason, I don't like that second Alien. I think they make the Marines look like assholes, and that kind of bothers me. And I don't know, there's just something about that movie, the little kid and all that stuff. It's just, you know, and three was kind of cool, and it missed the mark. And then all the ones after that, you know, they did the same thing with the Predator thing. It's like, okay, you got this cool thing. Now let's just cheese it up and just get something out there to make some money.
I was just going to ask you if you like the Predator flicks. Yeah, I liked like the first one or two of those. And then, it got to a point where it was just ran into the ground. I'm like, man, oh man, are you kidding me? Like that bothers me a lot because it makes me not lose respect for like the first one and second one, but it just makes me lose respect for the series as a whole. And, you know, a lot of these things don't need series. They're better left alone, you know, I'm sure there's going to be new, well, wasn't there a new Predator not too long ago? Didn't they that's what I thought. It's just like it. I loved it. Right. Growing up, it still to this day is the reason I do not like clowns. But I love the movie. And when they remade it, I refused to watch it just because I saw the clown. And I like his outfit, but the faces the dude makes, I'm like, no. I can't get behind
it. Well, that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, when you think about this stuff, it's like, okay, do I not like those similar type of horror movies because I'm just older now and I'm over it and I've outgrown it and this shit doesn't bother me the same way? Or does it really suck? So that's, you know, it's hard to say, you know what I mean?
I've never looked at it that way. Really? Yeah. That could have a lot to do with it.
You know, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, what I said before, it's like, I'll rattle off some titles of movies that I still dig to this day. But a lot of people will probably think they suck. You know, younger people especially will probably think those movies suck because they're old and the effects are the effects blow. But for me at the time, that's what those were the ones that did it. you know, just like you have yours, everyone's got their go-to type thing, you know?
Absolutely. So stemming off of the horror movies, your masks, did any horror movie ever, any of your masks that you've had throughout your career in Mushroomhead, did any horror movies influence any of the designs, or did you not have anything to do with the designs of your mask or whatnot?
Well, yeah, that the Beautiful Stories mask, I kind of bagged from the Nightbreed, the Clive Barker Nightbreed flick, the Dr. Deckard character. So that's my Savior Sorrow Arrow mask was kind of intended to be similar to that. And I didn't have anything to do with the making of that one. We had a guy that made all the stuff for us, and I kind of told him what I wanted, and he just kind of gave me his interpretation. But for the Beautiful Stories, it's I kind of wanted to do it myself and see what I could get. So I sculpted that mask on my own. And it looks pretty cool in some shots. In other shots, it looks from certain angles, it doesn't look as cool. But I definitely got a lot of influence from that Nightbreed movie, the Dr. Deckard character. That's kind of common knowledge, but you know, not totally. Like some people got it, some people didn't. You know, and I don't
right.
think. Well, I don't think it was one of the more popular Mushroomhead masks because I didn't put the X's. I didn't shoehorn an X face into it or anything like that.
I won't lie to you. That's the reason. Call me cookie cutter, but that was the reason. It's not that I disliked it, but I was like, man, I want the Mexes.
Right. No, that's fine. But I thought, you know, at that time, it's like, okay, everyone knows what the X face thing is. It's on every T-shirt. It's on every banner. It's on every flyer. It's on everything. You know, why does it have to be on every one of our masks? You know, why do we all have to wear the same outfits? Why does everything have to be the same? It's like, it doesn't have to. Like I was down for changing stuff up. You know, we're getting off topic from the horror movie thing, but like, you know, that was.
Well, no, that's fine. That's why I asked. I mean, yeah, there's no specific topic, man. We're just here to bullshit.
But that was the thing that, you know, about like, I thought that movie was kind of okay. It was unique and it was kind of, the story was cool. You know, everybody was into Clive Barker at that time because of the Hellraiser movies and all that kind of shit. But, I always thought that character in that movie was pretty cool. And I thought if I'm going to have a mask, I'm going to try this out, see how it looks. But I thought maybe some other people would be like, yeah, I'm going to do something different too. But you know, everyone, it's just, how many times can you shoehorn that X face onto a mask without it just looking like an X face on another mask? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I can. Well, you have a cult following of mask collectors, Mushroomhead mask collectors. And after the interview with you, I was receiving several messages like, the only mask I'm missing is this gravy mask. You know, I mean, I'm talking dozens of people. And, you know, I'd reach out to you to see if you'd had any or whatever, because I told him I would, and you didn't. And does that surprise you that people are so obsessed with, I mean, I'm talking, these are thousands of people. It's like a group of, I think like 21,000 people on Facebook, and it's just all Mushroomhead masks. That's all it is. That's all like the topics are, and like people post and stuff. Does that surprise you at all? Or is it just kind of like, whatever.
No, I'm not surprised by it. I think it's cool as hell that, you know, that you even have the possibility of like owning something like that. Cause that was another thing as a kid, there was nothing from movies. There was like no memorabilia or toys or any of that stuff that you could get. And when, I remember when like the first Star Wars was out for a while and they made those first shitty looking Star Wars figures. It was like, you know, me and all my friends, I remember just, we thought it, you know, we're 10 years old. And we thought it was the coolest thing that you can get those, you know. And then after that, you could get Planet of the Apes toys and stuff like that. And it's like, whoa, you know, this is cool. And it's, you know, you just couldn't get stuff back then.
Right. And those are worth a lot of money now. Those Star Wars toys, man, those are worth some dollars now.
If you're a fan of Shroom and you can afford it, you know, and you can get a mask from the guys that wear them, you know, from the same molds and all that stuff, you know, signed and all that, man, like that's some of the coolest shit ever. You know,
yeah, I agree. I wouldn't mind having a couple myself, like, honestly.
Like, you know, when we were kids too, like we all liked Kiss. So it's like, you know, did you join the Kiss Army? Are you part of the fan club? Did you do? I never did any of that stuff. Like a bunch of my friends were that gay for it, that they had to, you know, they joined Kiss Army and whatever. They got letters and whatever the hell they got.
Kiss Army. It's corny now, but back then, you know, that was probably awesome though. You know, I mean, I'm sure if Mushroom Head had a Mushroom Head Army or whatever, you know, I'd have joined it. Shit, I'd have been the first one to sign up, you know. And then I'd look at it now, almost 33 years old, and be like, man, that's kind of corny, you know. Like,
that's the thing. Well, you know, I mean, if we were a multi-platinum selling band, more stuff like that would have happened. There would have been more of that. You know, that's what I mean. Like,
true.
You know, at the level that Shroom is, it's, you know, it's not like totally small time, but it's not like a huge arena filling, you know, theater filling, you know, multi-platinum band, you know, but it still does enough to, you know,
created a genre, man, literally. I mean, I think you guys are the pioneers of new metal.
Exactly.
Honestly.
Well, I mean, it has its own thing, but to be able to get like exact like masks that the band actually wears is pretty cool. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even now, like, you know, I say, you know, some of that stuff, of course, but that would be something I wouldn't mind having, because like I said, I got that X face tattooed on my arm at the age of 15, you know, and it's something I wear with pride. You know, I in fact, I have a couple shirts, a Solitaire Unraveling shirt, You Don't Know Peace Until You've Had Suffering. And then the one old Mushroom Head shirt where it's red, lettering Mushroom Head on the front, and it's got a red face on the back of it. And I still have that. I don't wear them anymore because they're the armpits are worn out of them. You know, I wore them down to the threads, but they're put up now. But it's, you know, I mean, certain things like that, and I appreciate music as well. So certain things like that, I've always kind of collected band shirts, you know, and now more on a local level because, you know, that's what I deal with is local bands a lot. And so I've always appreciated band merchandise and things like that, but more so like, you know, I wouldn't go out and buy a Mushroom Head shirt now, you know, and that's no offense to the guys that are in the band still. Cause you know, their respect. I mean, J-Man's probably one of my favorite vocalists of all time. It's just, I'm not, you know, I'm just not into the new stuff and it's, just not into them like I used to be. You know, I listen to the older stuff all the time, but you know, again, when we talked about this last episode, I'm just not into the new stuff. To me, it's not Mushroom Head. And, you know, and to me, that's devastating, you know, being one of my, you know, all-time favorite bands. It's
well, that's the thing about, like, carrying on a name with none of the people that made it what it was. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, like you still have the name.
Yeah, like karaoke. Like,
you know,
said.
I always, like, when Axl Rose was doing his Guns N' Roses thing and there was nobody, you know, how is it Guns N' Roses if it's just Axl and a bunch of dudes that had nothing to do with any of the songs that made the band big in the first place? You know? But like
I agree.
People are still,
I agree.
You know, like that band could still fill like a 10,000 seat arena with nobody from the band in the band, but the singer. Like, it's just, it's weird how people just, they gravitate towards the name and not the individuals.
Yeah. See, and I'm different. Yeah. Yeah. That is weird. You know, I never really kind of looked at it that way. You know, people just do kind of attach themselves to that name or whatever. It's almost like a cult-like mindset. But I attach myself to individuals. And like I told you, and again, this is no offense to the guitar players now, I don't even know their names. It feels unoriginal to me, and it just feels lazy, you know. And again, I'm not sitting here trying to, you know, fucking suck your dick and be all, you know, a fangirl. But I mean, with you, it wasn't that way. It was very unique. It was very revolutionary. And it just now, it's just, you know, I don't know. So it's weird because I attach myself to people, especially like vocalists, because that's what I do. So more so the vocalists, but. You know, there was always that core group of you guys. It was Pig Venus, you, Skinny, J-Man, Jeffrey, Stitch, and
Smots.
Smots, yes. And that was when I got introduced to you guys, you know.
Well, that was one of the funny things touring, like, you know, we would always kind of exploit the Halloween thing. You know what I mean? We're a mass band, Halloween, people dress up. So it kind of makes sense to go out and tour and do everything at that time. And I remember, like, you know, Stitch, before he was in the band, he was like a super fan of the band. And now that he's in it, yeah, he was, really? You know, he was. I remember like setting up for the one tour. I mean, this was years ago, 2003, 2004, maybe. But it was, you know, he was like, if we're touring, we got to play more stuff from the first two records. We got to play more of the old stuff, more old school, more old school. Well, you know, that's great coming from him, you know, in this the point that I'm about to make kind of, you know, kind of carries over into what I was saying about like the horror movies that set me off when I was a kid and stuff too, is, you know, he's thinking of how kick-ass the band was when he was a fan, when he was in high school, before he was actually in the band and doing stuff. He wanted to go on stage while we were playing all of those older tunes. The problem is that Even though like the Double X album was like a compilation of like the first three albums, 13 for some reason seemed to be more of a kind of defining thing nationwide than, you know, and on a world stage than the like the super old stuff. Not that you know one was any better than the other or anything like that, but when people on a national level talk about old school Shroom, they're talking more about like the 13 era than what happened in Cleveland before. You know what I mean? So I remember tour, and we played those older tunes. It seemed like the crowd was just kind of scratching their head. Like they dug them and they got into them, but you know, when we played stuff off of 13, they were going more ape shit. Where it you know, in Cleveland, it would be everything, the old stuff too. But like I said, like on a national level, that's just how it seemed to me on that particular tour, that like the older tunes weren't going over quite the same as the newer stuff that was the most current.
Well, I think a part of that comes with, and excuse me, I'm stepping out of my place here, but I think a lot of that comes with the older stuff was more experimental. It was more, there was no like really defined genre to it. It was all different and it was so different. But with the newer stuff, like 13, that was a more defined sound. And it was more of, for lack of a better word, mainstream sound, for you guys, as mainstream as you guys could get at that time, you know? And I think that resonates more, you know, with, again, you know, a larger audience than that, you know, that dedicated cult following you have in Cleveland. And I mean, I'm sure coming from your guys' aspect, you're like, listen, this is we treat this as a business. We got to, you know, if we want to gain new fans, we got to play this new stuff, not this old stuff.
Yeah. It was definitely a weird transitional thing because there was member changes and we did have a major label and we had very limited time. So it was like, How do we appease everybody? You know what I mean? Like how do we make like all these people happy? Like how do we make the label happy? How do we make the old school fans happy? and how do we like gain some new people? And I don't think we ever really talked that much about that kind of stuff. I think we just, I remember coming off tour and it's like, okay, we go in the studio in 6 weeks. So we had 6 weeks to put as much material together. So that's what we did. You know what I mean? Like even though we had like those ideas of all that stuff kind of hanging over our heads, you know, trying to appease everybody, we still just had to work on whatever material we could come up with. And that's what we did. Okay. You know, and that's how that album come out.
Do you ever feel like, because I know, you know, I've worked with a lot of bands and bands that have been signed. I myself personally never have. I've been on management, never a label. Do you feel like, you know, like you said, you come off tour and we got 6 weeks to, you know, get into the studio. Do you ever feel like that sometimes when you're pressured into writing something or making something that it then becomes forced and it's not what the end product is not, the end result isn't what you visioned, and it's not up to par. Like, do you ever have that sour taste in your mouth? Like, damn, man, I could have wrote that part different, or we could have approached this so much different, or the way I wanted to, but no, we had a deadline and we had to get it out.
Yeah, there's some of that. You know, there's also like, we're under the gun, so you got a different mindset. So sometimes you come up with cooler stuff. You know, like the Sun Doesn't Rise thing. I mean, I literally wrote all the parts for that song in 5 minutes.
Yeah, you told me that the last interview. That's
some
crazy.
Of the other stuff too, like the actual, like the track 13, that instrumental thing at the end of 13. Same thing with that. I was just noodling around on the guitar one day, and that whole thing just kind of came right out. I mean, I remember working out a couple of things, but it was like, you know, a half hour, 20 minutes. I had it, you know, and it's just the same parts looping, and it's pretty and all that stuff. And we didn't know if we would make it, if it would end up being a song or what, but you know, it ended up just being that closing track on 13.
And it fits, rightfully so, man. Yeah. It fits perfectly, I think, in my opinion. And that wasn't one of my like favorite albums, I won't lie to you. Double X is definitely my favorite. I mean, Super Buick and the original stuff, but then when that stuff now, all right, quick question. I just thought of this. On Double X, when you guys were on, you know, Universal, did the songs like Womp and 43 and stuff that were brought to that album from prior albums, were those rewritten then or re-recorded, or was it like, how did that work?
I'm pretty sure that everything was just remixed. Nothing was re-recorded. I think, I don't know. There might've been like some extra track or something on a European release where we re-recorded a song or something like that. But I mean, I don't remember. That was a long time ago.
But I was just curious if you know, you rewrote the, like, cause I know you didn't record Bomb. So I was curious maybe if you wrote, you know, you did in turn on that album.
No. What happened was, you know, Universal was interested in the band. They signed the band, but they wanted to, I don't think there was any new material at the time. And I don't think M3 was that old. This is, like I said, this is just me guessing off the top of my head, you know, trying to think 20 plus years ago. But I think what the general consensus was, and I think the agreement between everybody was to just compile the best songs from the first three independent releases. So that, you know, on a national level, that's another thing too. On a national level, Double X was the first Mushroomhead record. And
well, Womp was so far ahead of its time.
But the point.
I want to thank McAlpine Meadery for sponsoring this episode of From the Stash Podcast, located at 10035 Johnsford Road, Beach City, Ohio, 44608. Phone number 330-756-5019. Again, 330-756-5019. They take passion in brewing high-quality European-style artisan honey wine known as mead. It's available in 87 retail stores. It's also available in 36 different states to your front door. You can order online at www.mcalpinemead.com. Again, that's www.mcalpinemead.com. Hours of operation, Wednesday 4 to 10, Friday 4 to 12, Saturday 12 to 12, bands Fridays and Saturday nights. Thanks again to McAlpine Meadery for sponsoring this episode of From the Stash Podcast. Now on to the show, folks.
About that record is, too, is that it's like, it was, it's a best of album. You know what I mean? It's like, if I released, you know, three Creed Ideas albums, I could definitely pick the best songs and put them on one record and be like, yeah, listen to this amazing album, you know? So it's, I mean, it's cool. It was a kind of a cool tactical advantage to be able to do that. But I think that kind of put pressure on us a little bit too, because it's like, okay, we're going to put out our second Universal release and we have 6 weeks. We have, you know, three or four song ideas, but nothing solid. So we're basically starting from scratch and we have 6 weeks. How do we follow up a freaking best of album? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do know what you mean, because it's like, that's going to be hard to match.
Exactly. And, you know, there's member changes from those first albums. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's, you know, you're going into a label, you're putting out a second album. Like, how do you do that? You know, it wasn't an easy thing. That's why it was just like, let's just whatever material we come up with. Let's just, you know, no pressure. Try not to think about it. Let's just come up with stuff and see what happens.
That's what makes, I think, you guys a lot really unique, and why you do have such a cult following to an extent, because none of the CDs you guys wrote felt rushed when you were in the band, I should say. Let me preface that. They didn't feel rushed. It felt genuine, and it felt like, I mean, it took how long for 13 to come out after? What was the album before that? Double X, yeah? Yeah, so what? How many years in between was that? Like fucking seven?
No, it was only a couple.
Why does it seem so long?
Actually, what happened was is the Eclipse record deal happened. I'm being reminded of more semi facts that I can think of. The one guy from Eclipse Records, who, you know, an independent record label at the time, was really interested in Shroom because of the draw that they had at the World Series of Metal shows in Cleveland that were happening pretty much every year at that time. So, you know, he struck up a deal with the band, and Double X first came out on Eclipse Records. And then Universal picked it up, got interested, because it did like 30 or 40,000 copies in like a couple of months. So it was, you know, an independent
wow
label put out this album that's doing, you know, 30, 40,000 quickly. It's like, whoa, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, shit, bands can't even do that nowadays. Exactly. Mainstream.
So that's where the Universal interest came in, I think. And then they wanted to basically re-release the same album, but they couldn't. I think legally you can't just take the same album and release it under another label when you still have a contract with the original label. So it had to be remixed.
Right.
So they got, I think the guy.
That's right. There was.
That's what I mean. Like, I kind of forgot for a second too. So the guy that mixed it was he was like drum editor or something on the And Justice for All Metallica album. So so yeah, so that was kind of a cool factoid. Like he did, I guess he did a bunch of drum editing and stuff on that Metallica album, the guy that mixed the Universal version of Double X. So
got ya. Yeah, because those labels will definitely throw a bigger producer, mixer, master, whatever at you guys to
Well, that's what happened with 13. We had Johnny Kay, who was the guy. He's the guy that did the Disturbed albums. But he didn't do the whole album. He just did he did Sun Doesn't Rise and Nowhere to Go.
Is that isn't Fiona Apple in a track on that? Or am I thinking of what chick is on a track on that that album? What am I thinking of? Or is it Save Your Sorrow that has a woman in the song? Oh, what is it? I can't think of the name.
One More Day. One More Day.
I can't think of the name of the song. Yeah, One More Day. Who is that? Who is the female vocalist?
I'm pretty sure she... No. It's a local girl. She was in a band.
Oh, okay, okay. I don't know why I thought Fiona Apple then.
Well, Skinny was a Fiona Apple fan for a while, so he might have said something in an interview that made you remember that. But yeah, it definitely wasn't her. That would have cost a boatload of dough that we didn't know.
I had wondered that. I'm like, wow, of all people, yeah, Fiona Apple, and especially at that time.
It was a local girl. I can't remember. I don't know. Jay got her from someplace, and she was, I don't know if she was like into R&B and stuff, but she did, you know, she sang Whitney Houston tunes and stuff like that. Really good stuff.
Yeah, she had a hell of a voice. Yeah, she did. You could just tell from that track.
So, I don't know. It, like I said, it's been a lot of years, and I've been out of the loop, so, you know.
I know you probably suppressed a lot of it. You know,
whatever. It's all still there, but not. It's been a lot of years. So trying to get everything right.
I get it.
Who knows? I could be 100% right, or I could be 10% right.
Like I told you,
take it for what it is.
Well, I've been like, I think I'm like 1 for 10 so far this episode. Yeah, I totally forgot there was 2 double X's, and I remember I had each one too. I think one was a digipack and one was a regular jewel case CD.
Yeah, if I remember correctly. I had all my stuff. I've sold pretty much everything. You know, I have very little Mushroom Head memorabilia left. So.
This may be, if you don't want to answer this, you don't have to. Do you ever miss it? Miss Mushroom Head?
There was a lot of good stuff, a lot of good times. And, you know, I was basically making a living playing music, which is what I always wanted to do. You know, it wasn't exactly the way I wanted to do it, but I was still doing it, you know, and it was cool. Yeah, I fucking loved it. I love the touring aspect and everything. You know what I mean? That was one of my favorite things about touring was like, I don't have to worry about any of this shit except for, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm not in charge of this bus. I don't got to worry about that. I'm not the manager of the band. All I got to do is, you know, make sure my gear's running because I was kind of my own tech. So
right. You know, I remember you saying that.
I tech my gear, and I liked, you know, an hour or so a day to set my shit up and noodle around on the guitar anyway, you know.
Okay, so hot take here. Now I know they brought J-Man back and this, that, and a third. Was there any point in time that
no.
talks were with you to come back?
No. But I was just curious. Never even really talked to anybody until like a year, year and a half ago. So, you know, and I, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I mean, understandably so. I can only imagine how you felt.
It's funny thinking about it now. You know, it's like I was pretty pissed for a while because, you know, like I said, in, you know, last time we talked, you know, I'm a pretty solid dude. You know, like I tell shit like it is or like I see it. And, you know, I don't have a drinking problem. I don't have a drug problem. I'm totally reliable on the music end. You know, I got killer gear. I got, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm not like some schlouch jack off fake rock star homo. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm
right.
This really
right. No, I got you. Yeah.
As a fucking musician in your fucking band, you know, as far as like writing and performing and just being a badass player, you know what I mean? You know, like studio, I nail shit in the studio. There's never a problem. You know what I mean? It's like everything. Like I think the most solid guy in the band as far as, you know, producing material and whatnot for the band. So for me to get kicked out because I was honest and spoke my mind was like, what the fuck is this shit? Like usually you get kicked out because you're a liability. Yeah. You don't get kicked out because you're kind of, you know, making shit happen just because you disagree. Like, okay. So yeah, for, you know, a couple years I was pretty fucking pissed, but after a while it's just like, you know, I don't even fucking care because, you know, I wasn't doing what I want to do. I wasn't allowed to really be myself. It was, you know, it wasn't really my thing from the beginning. Right. You know what I mean? I wasn't a Faith No More fan. I wasn't a Mr. Bungle fan. You know, the mask gimmick to me had already been like bagged by Slipknot. So even though Shroom did it first on a world stage, I felt like we were Johnny Come Latelys. And,
right.
And I also felt like it was being taken way too seriously. You know, like our look, it's like, okay, I'm not like into the whole mask gimmick, but I'm not totally against it because it is kind of fun and cool. But to take it as seriously as it was taken just made it seem like this is fucking gay. Like, why is it, you know, not to offend any like homosexual.
Can I answer that? Oh no, you're okay. I sometimes use that slur. People get it.
Context here, but you know,
I know what you mean.
Like, you guys are taking the wrong shit serious.
Like,
so I would, you know, I would speak my mind and be like, this is dumb. Why don't we do this? You know, and I think, you know, I came off as negative, even though I was trying to be like more positive than most people, but whatever. I mean, it is what it is, you know.
Well, let me say this, the whole mask mystique and stuff like that. That was first I heard the music and then I saw the mask of Sat and the third or whatever. Well, me is, you know, growing up as a teen and younger, listening to you guys and then seeing that was just so like not lifelike or not real. I remember on the internet just searching Mushroom Head Unmasked for hours and hours and I could never find it. And then remembered seeing 216. That was the first time I ever saw you, J-Man, and Pig Venus without masks. And yeah. Well, Skinny was your drummer, right? For 216? Yeah, and Skinny. All four of you guys. First time I'd ever seen without your mask. I think I was like 14 or 15. And I just remember I couldn't take my eyes off. I'm like, that's what they look like, you know, because it made you guys superheroes, right? So it was a great gimmick. Like, it truly was, man. Like, so I could see where they're coming from in a sense, but I can see where you're coming from because, and I hope that if any of the guys listen to this, they don't take this as a knock, but maybe if they focus more on their music now instead of their fucking costumes, they would have music that's worth a shit, you know? And I think that's, you know, I think, you know, probably a lot of your frustrations were like, dude, we need to write, you know, CDs. You're worried about the damn mask.
Right.
Well, wearing this mask, you know.
Just kind of like with that, you know, with that X-Face thing, not putting it on my mask. It's like, all right, like, you know, we beat that thing into the ground. I mean, it's a brand. It's everyone sees it. Everyone knows it. You know, why do we have to have it on our, you know, our suits, our vests, our pants, our masks? Like, you know, there's, you know, with every band member up on stage and all the banners and everything, there's like 20 million X faces up there. So, you know, I don't know, maybe like, maybe that's more of like a, you know, a punk rock attitude towards it. Like, okay, we don't need to, you know, we don't need to beat all the, continuously beat all this shit into the ground. We're already established on a world stage for over 10 years now. So why does everything have to be like just a slightly different version of the same thing over and over and over again? Like, we can do it in a different way where it comes off different, and people are still going to love it because we're this band.
Yeah. That's what attracted me to J-Man, because he was the only different one. You know, I mean, Jeffrey was to an extent too. I remember when he came out with that, you know, like Hannibal Lecter mask. I was like, that's amazing. But J-Man, I remember for my like local basketball games when I was younger, when I'd go to the high school games, I'd paint my face like him. But we were purple and gold. That was the color of my team, our high school. And I would paint my face like J-Man, but purple and gold. You know, because I just thought it was so neat because he just stuck out like a sore thumb to the rest of you guys. You know, the rest of you guys kind of looked like lack of a better word, backup dancers.
Yeah, like it should have been.
If that makes sense.
It would have made more sense for the band to be called J-Man and the Mushroom Heads. You know what I mean? If you look at it like that, you know, where the singer is the guy.
Well, I appreciated the musicianship, so don't get me wrong, man. I just mean like the logo, like he, and plus I was into vocals, you know, and he had done it totally in a way I'd never seen. And it was just
understandable.
A lot of people, for whatever reason,
whether they play or sing or whatever, a lot of people just gravitate towards the singer because he's the segue between the band and the crowd. He's the guy holding the microphone. He's the ones rattling off the lyrics, and he's the one talking to you in between tunes, getting you geared up for the next tune. So, you know, that's, you know, everybody always gravitates toward the singer. That's why, like, it's, you know, how many singers have left bands and gone on to continue to be like famous? You know, it's very difficult. It's very difficult for a guitar player to do that unless they join something that's already established with a name. And for a drummer or bass player, it's like next to impossible. You know, even guys,
very true.
Like
very true.
In huge bands. Like didn't that
Joey Jordison from Slipknot, he left and
he did that Murder Dolls. He did another record too with some guys. It was kind of an all-star band thing, and I can't remember. But because of all the guys in the band, they got we're going to play you on the radio, and we're going to put you on these festivals, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, even though they didn't earn anything on, you know. As individuals, they've done shit collectively with other bands. But that's what I mean. Like a lot of those super groups.
Other bands, yeah.
You know, none of those super groups ever last very long, you know, or get very big. It's really strange, man. That whole thing. Yeah. It's like people, that's why people gravitate towards a name over the individuals. Like I'm going to see Guns N' Roses. Well, no, you're not. You're going to see Axl Rose and a bunch of hired guys. You know, well, but it says Guns N' Roses. Okay. Yeah. So it doesn't matter then. As long as it's Axl and it says Guns N' Roses on the t-shirt, you're okay with it?
Let me be honest with you. I think you take Axl out and it still sells out. I really truly do. Now, I don't think they could put any Joe Schmo there, but put some Randy Dandy that is even a local singer or
maybe
something.
With the whole band and the name.
But that name.
You know, all the other original guys and the name, it might be able to work. But that's what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, for Christ's sake, yeah, Leonard Skinner.
But, you know, that's a different thing, too, because half of those guys were killed in a plane crash, and the singer's brother took over as vocalist, not just some guy they auditioned. So, you know what I mean? There's like, and I think people just rallied behind it because of the tragedy of it, not because they, you know, one guy OD'd and another guy ended up in a nut house because of drugs, or, you know what I mean? Like that typical tragic rock star gay story, you know?
It's not even
tragedy. It's just
your typical what a Buddy Holly story.
So, you know, whatever. So the singer thing, you know,
I agree 100%.
It has nothing to do with the name. You know, so if you have the name, you could fucking do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the right backing too, you know, with promotion and stuff. I mean, Slipknot's a perfect example of that, you know. They literally were just made and slapped on a stage and boom, next thing you know. I mean, anything that's shoved down people's throats mainstream will, I mean, it whether it catches or not, it's bound to, just because it's mainstream and people just, they just gravitate towards that, those types of things. They want to be with the in crowd and stuff. And,
you know, I mean, I like Kiss. You know,
Journey's still going.
I'm a Kiss fan from back in the day when I was a kid, but I don't like any of the new stuff, and I don't want to go see them play those. You know, I remember when they called it quits 25 years ago or whatever, and they came back on their reunion tour, and then or their farewell tour, whatever the fuck it was, and then they came back the next year with another farewell tour or reunion farewell tour with all the original members. And I was like, cool, I'll go see it again, you know, hoping that they would play like a few, you know, older obscure tunes. And they didn't. They did exactly the same set with maybe one song difference. And I was like, I'm done. That's it. You know, that was one of the, I remember that was, was one of the first things to me.
It's
where
just to
like,
make money.
This industry sucks. These bands are going to just milk it for everything it's worth. And, you know, and here these guys are, you know, God bless them. You know, they're 70 years old practically, and they got two fake members, and they're still out there as Kiss raking in the fucking dough because I mean, are those new bands? Like, who the fuck is going to see these guys?
I know they're not new fans. It's just that, you know, anywhere from the age of my age up to, I mean, almost 70. I mean, they're probably arguably the largest
like,
rock band of all time.
I mean, see this shit. Like,
who's larger?
I grew up
with
it. I've seen it a million fucking times. I have zero interest in going to see Kiss.
There's one old band I want to see, AC/DC. I would love to see them live. I watched a video of them recently, and they're still out there ripping their shirts off and, you know, jumping around and
well, that's,
you
that's,
know,
you know, I mean, AC/DC
playing all their old songs
and, too, because they're not like a rock spectacle. They're just a rock and roll band. So they can kind of pull it off, and they, you know, and that even though their original singer died, their big hit record was with the guy that's still in the band, the Back in Black thing.
Yep.
Well, they don't really
sound identical.
Like
so
each other. They sound a lot different. Brian Johnson got like a higher screechy thing. And Bon Scott had like this really odd nasally voice. So like the vocals on Highway to Hell are not the same as Back in Black.
So, oh, okay. Yeah, I get, you're right. You're right. Yeah, I guess maybe I think it's
they're both
similar
really
enough.
Gritty. They, you know, they both.
I guess
both vocalists really.
They revolutionized that, like screaming
screechier.
Almost. You know,
he's got a screechier. Raspy thing going on. I don't know, but they both, even though they sound different, they both fit in the band the right way. It was a weird thing. They were very,
they can do each other's material
to find, and it's guy passable to fill in after the original dude died, because it was like, whoa, this is better actually. Like, who knows where it would have went?
That's not an easy tone to hit.
Original guy, you know, because that Highway to Hell album like really took them over the top, and then Back in Black was just the whole album was a hit album. So
I love it. That's one of my very first rock albums.
And I saw them on a couple tours, and they were good. But it's like, yeah, whatever. AC/DC was just, you know, I liked a few songs, but I was more into the guitar god shit, like Randy Rhoads and VH, you know.
Yeah, Van
some
Halen
and bands and Yngwie, stuff like that. Yeah. I like Zeppelin, but I wasn't a super
Zeppelin
fan. And they were like a little bit before my time. You know what I mean? But I dug them. You know, I like some Joe Walsh stuff.
Joe Walsh? Joe Walsh fan at all?
I'm just
I love Joe Walsh. I forget what song it is. He talks about breaking up the hotel room and stuff. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, life's been good. Ever since I was a little boy,
I've
loved
cool
that
tune.
Song.
No, he's got a lot of good shit going on. I mean, he was in the James Gang and the Eagles, and you know, he's done some like real substantial stuff.
Yeah.
Was
he in the Yardbirds or whatever
Page.
They were called? That was like,
I don't think Joe Walsh had anything to do with that.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he did either. I was just curious. I remember reading a book, Hammer of the Gods.
Yeah. That's when
they did some fucked up shit, man.
Was like, just was kind of a new thing. It was cool. You know?
Yeah, well, like, they were the one part I read, and it's in there. I mean, anybody listening to this doesn't believe me, you can Google it. They said that they would, you know, they traveled in a van, you know, and they would, like, take girls on the van and, you know, have their way with them, and then just throw them out in the middle of the country, whatever route they're on their next date of their tour or whatever. And I'm just like, holy shit, man, some literal horror movie stuff.
Well, people get dropped off
all
over.
Could you imagine doing that nowadays? My God.
I don't think it was
being dropped off though.
It's not that difficult to find a lift, but I guess if you're out in the weeds like those guys were, like how some of that is out there and you know over in that country, then maybe. I don't know, who knows.
What do you think about Marilyn Manson? Were you ever a fan of him? Did you ever get to play with
one,
him? I'm just curious.
When I was in the band,
thoughts.
We did one festival thing where we played. We got there, and as soon as we were done, we packed up and left because we had a deadline. We had to be somewhere, something. I don't know. We had a long drive. I can't remember what it was. So we didn't stay and watch the Manson show. But I think there was big controversy over that show because he didn't play or something, and there was like they rioted or something. Can't remember exactly what happened, but something crazy like that happened at that show. But that was the only time I ever played with him, was at that. And as far as being a fan, I never really got into it.
Yeah, I got into like his first album I forget one. It was pretty heavy, and I really enjoyed it. And I read his autobiography and watched all this stuff on him because he just fascinated me as a person. And he grew up right down the road from me, actually. And so I was just curious, you know, because my grandfather lived around that area, and my one friend's dad went to school with him. I mean, his name's Brian Warner, is what his actual name is. So I was just curious. I don't know why that popped in my head. I mean, maybe because I was thinking about throwing. When I was talking about them throwing girls out in the middle of nowhere, because he did some real fucked up. Manson's done some real fucked up shit.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like a lot of that 90s
him and Trent
stuff,
Reznor.
I didn't really I don't know. I mean, like, because I'm not really like an 80s guy either. You know, every now and then I talk about this stuff with people and they're like, oh, you're just stuck in the 80s. And I'm like, well, I didn't really like that much 80s stuff. You know, I go, if you're going to talk about a an era of music that I think was the best, it was probably the 70s because there was the biggest variety of different things. And there was almost all of it was quality.
I was going to say original. It was all originality because there was nothing else before it to really, it was all pioneer. It was all revolutionary because there really wasn't much before it. I mean, the Beatles and the Monkees and fucking shit, like a bunch of overrated, excuse me, garbage ass bands, you know, but they, you know, they took it up another notch, you know, and then another notch. And I agree with you. I think that the 70s leading into the early 80s is probably the most genuine, we'll ever see rock music.
Don't knock the Beatles and the Monkees, dude. They're.
I like the Monkees, but yeah, I cannot stand the Beatles, man. They're god awful. I do.
Like the Beatles, just. That's a whole just another level of everything right there. I mean, there's not a lot of flash musicianship, but like the songwriting and the harmonizing and the orchestrating and the stuff that those guys did with the gear that they did it on too was like, it's nobody's done it since and nobody will. And like the Monkees was a totally different thing. I mean, they got a lot of really good, well-written songs, you know, if you're into that stuff, but they, you know, the TV show, I think kind of ruined them and all that kind of stuff, but they were huge back in the day. And nobody really knows like how, you know, there was no like internet back there. So, the Monkees?
Were they before or after?
They were after. But now.
Yes. Yeah, it's no disrespect to the Beatles. It's just like, to me, I listen to it, man, like, and I don't see,
I'm not like a huge Beatles fan, but there's a lot of stuff that I do dig and I can really appreciate. And there's, you know, they got a lot of stuff that tunes that I don't like at all. But, you know, they're like every dude in the band sang and wrote and played their instrument well. So you just, you know, it's hard to see any bands now that do that. And, you know, and I'm sure they're out there, but they're just not what's hip and nobody's like taking notice of any real, you know, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. No. Anything mainstream's sure written by 90 people.
I'm sure that there's tons of bands out there that deserve to be something big and special and they'll never even see the light of day.
I was just going to ask you that. Is there any guitarist present day or even just bands, if you don't want to name guitarists or whatever, that came out in the 2000s that you truly enjoy, that you'll pop in and listen to? Is there any at all? I figured you were going to say like, that, honestly.
I think part of the problem is like the production values of the records aren't doing these people justice, and they're not. And it's weird too because like I'm like, you know, I'm a technique guy. I like to hear musicians that play with like impeccable technique. It's cool, but I like it when it's woven into like great songs. Because to me, like the song is what moves you. The song is what like, you know, gives you that emotional, that you know what I mean. And it's like, if it don't move me, it don't move me. What am I, you know, I'm not going to go out of my way. I'm not going to go out of my way to do it, to listen to it. Well, I mean,
but it's overproduced,
you know,
too.
Like, you know, I don't remember in the last interview if I mentioned that band Muse at all.
Yes, yeah, like he may Muse have. I is, can't recall if
as
he
far
did,
as
it was
new
super
bands
brief.
Go, you know, they've been around for like, I don't know, 15 years now or something like that. But that's one of my favorite bands just because of the writing. And the guitar player sings, plays piano. You can totally tell he's a schooled musician. I mean, the guy knows his stuff. He's like a concert pianist. I think guitar is his secondary thing, but like, you know, they've got everything. They've got pop songs, funk songs, digital experimental sounding things. They've got like hard rock stuff. They've got metal. I mean, they got it all, you know? So, I mean, if you're a metal fan, you're not going to dig them.
Well, I appreciate everything. I actually, the older I'm getting, the more I'm noticing, I'm liking what us, you know, young bucks call post hardcore or progressive. It's heavy music, but it's singing. There is no screaming, very little breakdowns and things like that. Very melodic, a lot of tapping, a lot of sweeping, things like that. A lot of time signature changes, but it's a beautiful voice over it. Like,
I know exactly what
I'm talking about.
I know exactly
R&B,
what you're talking about. The problem with,
you know,
those bands, and this is why I can't really get into any of those guys. Like, there's a couple of the guitar players that I'll see, like on a guitar site doing a demo for like a signature model or something like that. There's a couple guys that stick out that are like really good, but I don't like listen to any of their stuff. I mean, I don't own it. I don't, whatever. But to me, just a lot of that, it's just, you know, I think of some of the guys that wrote like instrumental progressive type stuff back in the like late 80s and early 90s. And those were the guys that like kind of, I got a lot of inspiration from. And nowadays it's like from a production value, it's like they're all using the same gear with the same setting and the same studio playing the same just shit over and over and over again. And it's not just now because in the 80s you could get, these Starlicks VHS cassettes, and then they started putting them out on DVDs, where it was all these mega shred guys from these bands would do like a lesson video, and they would show you all this stuff. And then you go, you know, they do all this killer technique stuff, and these guys can play their asses off. But you listen to their record, and it's like there's not one original song on this record. You have the cookie cutter rock song, funk song, blues song, neoclassical song, you know, and then they'll just do another version of the same type of thing. And all they're doing is like shoehorning their licks into these styles, which to me was just like, okay, this is lame. That's why, like, even back then, you know, I was really into the shred stuff and everything guitar wise. But I couldn't get into like any of these other dudes. You know, a lot of my guitar buddies were like, this guy's my favorite. And I'm like, well, why? They're like, I don't know. There's just something about his style. It's like really cool. And it's like, yeah, but his songs, none of these, can you name one song that you really like? Well, yeah, but the whole album, you know, it's not the same. That's why, like I said, I like to hear the technique woven into good songs. That's why I liked a lot of the bands that I liked, was because of that kind of stuff.
When it's not their style, you know, like say, well, I like his style. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's his style, but not really, because then it's compressed down, and then there's why am I blanking on this? Then there's presets, you know, put on it that 19 right. other guitarists.
That's what,
I, that
that's what I'm saying.
Like, used before just, him, so it's like, not his.
He's
style,
got a bunch
you know?
Of. He's got a bunch of. He's not a standout guy. He's not a Van Halen or an Yngwie Malmsteen. Even though he's that good and he plays like killer stuff, but you know, you just need the songs to give you, you know, a higher step up, and a lot of these guys just didn't have a song. So I accept it.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you one last question. You're going to jump off your own set an hour and a half, but I would like to bring you on more so often. I was actually asking some of my fans and stuff, you know, I was like, if I could get him, you know, even once a month, that would be awesome. And of course they're all for it. And I don't, And sure. I truly enjoy it a lot, you know. But I have one more question.
It's no big deal.
Where did you get the name Gravy from?
Davey Gravy.
Well, Davey Gravy.
Well, that kind of came from when I was jamming in that band, right? You know. Yeah, like everybody was like goofing around.
Run. Oh my god, with, I haven't heard that
nicknames
years.
On that. And actually Shroom released that Runt album, the first Runt album. So when they were putting the packaging together, we decided to just go with nicknames instead of like or full names and stuff. So that just carried over from the Runt into the Shroom thing. That's no big deal. Yeah. But you know, but of course, when I was on the road, you know, when I was on the road and stuff, and it, you know,
well, hey,
chicks
man,
would be like, "Why is your name Gravy?" I'd be like, "Cause I shoot big loads."
You know, yeah,
I would just say some smart ass shit like that,
and they're thick,
you know. Yeah, sorry.
I thought there was going to be a lot better story. I'm not gonna lie, but. Like maybe you shit your pants one time at band practice or something. No, you know what I mean? And you sat in it and said, call it gravy or some shit. I don't know.
Nothing,
I just thought there'd be something
special.
Well, hey, Davey Gravy, I appreciate your time, man. And like, I don't want to rush off here. So don't think that at all, but I do want to try to keep it under an hour and a half. And I'd love to have you back again, man. Like I said, I'd love to make it a regular thing where we could come up with topics that you can just talk about stuff you want to talk about, or, you know, have fans or whatever bring in questions or something, whatever it may be. I enjoy talking to you, man. I really, truly do. And
oh yeah. No,
and I appreciate your time, dude. Cause I know you're a busy guy, man. I appreciate your patience.
Not a problem.
Most of all,
I've
patience. Listened,
man.
You have the patience.
I've been around
the
block a few times. I understand how this shit works. So it's like, it's no big deal, dude. You know, if we have something set up and it falls through or whatever, we'll make it happen. You know?
Yeah.
Like life is not hinging on what we're doing here. You know what I mean? It's just,
right.
It's just fun and cool to do once in a while. So
not at all.
Yeah. Whenever you want to do another one, we can make it happen. I got stuff to talk about, dude. I got a custom guitar company we haven't even touched on.
Well, it'll be. No, right. See, and that's what I'm saying. I would like, that's what I mean. So the next time we do talk, we're going to hit that. We're going to actually plan it out a little bit better. And that's on my end, and to where it's not scripted again, because I hate scripted interviews and not even interviews. You're just a host.
You got to formulate a few things. But yeah, we had to, even though it's post.
Oh, absolutely. I have notes. Yeah, absolutely.
Going.
Right. And then it stemmed into, you know, an hour talk about music and stuff. So that's why I like it, because it's genuine
someplace
conversation.
Else, and that's how it works usually. Right.
Right. Especially for me, I'm a manic mess. But I better let you go, because I seriously will sit here and talk to you for the next hour, 2 hours, and not realize that the episode's almost 3 hours long.
Just hit me up when you want to do another
one. Man,
we'll
I really appreciate your time, dude. And
we'll talk to you soon, dude.
Absolutely.
I want to thank A Catholic Clothing for sponsoring this episode of From the Stash Podcast. If you're looking for the best urban streetwear in the world, not only designs, but quality, go to www.acathlico.com. Again, that's www.acathlaco.com. Or visit your local Zumiez retailer store and use code ACATHLASWAG, all capital letters, all one word, on the website for 10% off.